Welcome to episode 2F06, Homer Badman, originally broadcast November 27th, 1994. I'm Matt Groening, creator of Milhouse.
David Merkin, executive producer and showrunner.
I'm Greg Daniels. I wrote this one.
David Silverman, supervising director.
That's one of my favorite, before we go to get to Jeff, that's one of my favorite opening things stolen from the Time Bandits, but I was happy to steal it.
Jeffrey Lynch, animation director.
And I'm Julie Kavner, and I play the voice of Marge.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I never knew that.
That's one of my favorite openings, too, by the way. I love that one.
Yeah, isn't that great?
I didn't know it was stolen from anywhere.
It's stolen. Terry Gilliam, the brilliant visual mind of Terry Gilliam, is fun to rip off. And whenever we've taken The Simpsons out on the road and we play our clip collection, we have all the openings tied together. By the way, if you'd like us to come, just contact us. It's about $8,000 a person. Well, you'll figure it out. But whenever we play that one, that gets the biggest cheer in the grouping. It's people get very excited. I don't know whether they know it or they like it, or they're excited that we stole it.
I just liked it. I thought it was original.
But it's not. It was for Terry, not for us. Anyway, there's Greg, who wrote this episode. Did a great job.
Jeff.
This is a very,
Jeff.
Very popular episode among the nerds. No, among all our fans, actually. And it has a lot of things that are very dear to my heart, which we'll get into about one of the reasons it went the directions it did. But Greg, do you remember the genesis of this?
Yes,
clearly
I do.
Doesn't.
It was a little bit different, as I recall, the way I pitched it. I think it was more of a Lisa story, and it was going to be about opposing her feminist ideals with her against her father and putting her more in the middle. And as we...
And then I said, that sucks.
Exactly.
No, not at all. I mean,
as we went
a great
through the process, it became more of a satire of the media and shows like Hard Copy.
We have to be really nice to Greg today at this, because his parents are actually here listening to us do the commentary, which is the height of entertainment, by the way.
That's my insurance policy.
They're going to come in and comment on commentary.
They're going to stay after I leave, too.
So that discarded idea, you used that on King of the Hill, right?
Well, this is actually very similar, because King of the Hill had a lot of kind of, you know, family common sense things versus feminism and other outside.
It's one of my favorite visual bits, by the way, is this nice piece of animation of Bart running right into the wall.
Very nicely done, Chad.
Very nicely done by Mr. Lynch. Oh, there you go.
Good sound.
Nothing like hurting children for quality comedy. I keep trying to point that out to people, but they resist.
If only we'd listen.
I had great luck. I had a couple of great animators, Chris Clements and Eli Lester and Nancy Cruz. Nancy went on to direct. Eli went on to become a Disney animator. And Chris Clements went on to direct as well.
Yep.
And they've all gone on to drink quite a bit.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Well, they started
Chris,
that under me.
Yeah, right. That's what the effect Jeff has on all his staff.
I want to point out, too, that Jeff has since worked on the Spider-Man movies, and you'll see in his action sequence why he was probably chosen to do that coming up in a little bit.
Very nice animation on the sourpuss Homer there, by the way. Quite enjoyable. And Jeff, yeah, you did do great work on Spider-Man, by the way.
Well, thank you. I wish I could. It's Sam Raimi. I wish I could take credit.
Well, I think you should.
Yeah, you can.
Sam's not here.
Sam doesn't know what the hell he's doing. It's all Jeff.
It was
everybody.
All directing Spider-Man was really cool, Jeff.
So anyway, this did evolve into something that I was very, very upset and concerned about at that time, and it only got worse, which is the way the media was, the tabloidization of
right.
the media. It was
and
my...
If, do you remember specifically around this time, there was a television executive who was on Hard Copy, the show Hard Copy, and they had, like, kissed an actor on one of their shows or something like this, and they did that slow motion
they would always
footage
do.
Of them walking down the street and made them look like some kind of monster.
That's exactly right. Hard Copy was the show that was, at the time, the most disturbing show. Now it's totally like the nicest show. Everything has become much more disturbing in the ensuing 12 years or whatever since this. And but yeah, what they would do is they would and it happens on TV now all the time. You shouldn't listen to the news. You shouldn't believe the news, particularly the local news. They're
only
all
believe
horrible.
Audio commentaries.
Yeah, that's where you should
the
get
one
your
real
news.
Audio commentaries are the only things that are not controlled by the media
and animation. All animation.
Yeah. But yeah, what we have a tendency to do is we make everybody guilty before there's any kind of trial. And that was the beginning of news shows using nasty music underneath an innocent picture or footage of a person, putting it into slow motion, as Greg was saying, and making the person seem evil just getting his car keys, which is what Homer does a little later. This is our classic ripoff of every Bruce Willis movie and everybody else.
There we go.
And that's really hard to do, right? To have slow motion in animation?
It's a lot of in-betweening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That probably took one quarter of the time of the rest of the show.
Absolutely. You just don't make the camera go slow-mo?
No.
I wish I could have. I would have been happy.
And the animators hate to do slow because it's twice the work, and they're incredibly lazy and shiftless. That's just what you get with them. They're trying to get out. They don't work late at all. They work. What do you guys work, like 2 or 3 hours a day? And then,
I got a cramp in my hand. I got to go.
Take an hour off for lunch, and then we're done. You know the song.
As I mentioned before, usually we're drinking so much, we don't really have a concept of time.
And I remember David used to like to torture the animators, and we had one train wreck of a circus train that was just probably the hardest thing in the world to ever animate.
That was. We wrote this thing that we were very excited about, and Mr. Silverman over there, David Silverman, would come to me often in tears with some of the things we'd come up with and say, do you have any idea what this involves? And he was always very nice. He was never, like, angry or saying that you guys are insane. It was just, you're going to kill several people. And I would say, well, how about if we just kill one person, right?
Yes.
And you'd say, that's okay. I have someone that will, I'm glad to sacrifice and let him die working on it. I mean, what is it, David? It's about 17,000 cells per show.
I would say it's close to 25,000.
I'd say 72,000.
So I hear
80. That does a lot of extra
80.
Work that he really doesn't have
really?
To. We always have to throw out those extra 50,000 cells.
I love the animation on this. The angles and stuff are just, it's brilliant. I mean, look at that. It's so...
I don't like that one.
Than a regular sitcom, and you have no idea where the story's going to go from the opening and the candy thing, and it's one line, and you don't have any idea that it's going to go where it goes.
That's something actually. It's I don't know when that started, but I know that at the time that I wrote this with you guys, there was a sense of, hey, wouldn't it be kind of cool to start off with a set piece for the first act? Whereas before, I think a lot of times we had the same story go from act one, and then you needed two act breaks. And the idea behind the set piece beginning was like, you actually only can get away with one act break because you fill up act one with a completely unrelated set piece. And I think that became very, very big.
Very much
right?
The structure. We only had the tiniest thread generally from the very first act, which is in itself its own exciting set piece. And even though you sort of made it describe that kind of helped us, it also hinders you because you almost have to have a complete story in the first act and a whole new idea and something that's very exciting that topped the last first set piece that we did. And actually, this is one of my very favorites.
But this is related. I mean, it did lead into it, going to the candy thing, which you don't know. I mean, the whole setup.
Well, the original idea is that these self-contained set pieces did have some... symbolic or reverberation.
Light thread that would go through. But
with this, you can't see where you're going to go. You get surprised.
But it's the setup to a great joke. I mean, if you just do the joke without that setup.
Exactly. It takes it into a whole other level to do that.
But I think in the story pitching phase, I was thinking maybe I'll do an episode at a candy convention. Maybe I'll also do an episode at some other episode with the sexual harassment thing. I think it just felt like, I don't have a whole episode with a candy convention, but...
No, it's a perfect first act and a perfect place to put Homer. And some of my favorite things are in that, the explosion, the pop rocks phenomenon.
Yes, that was hilarious. I don't remember where that came from, but that was such a great idea.
I might have wanted to do that because I was after a big explosion. And this was typical of our conversations at the time. I would say something like that, and everybody would look at me and say, that's a little too big.
Yeah.
And then I would kind of get annoyed and say, well, then we're definitely going to do it. but yeah, it was.
It seemed to be a lot of fires.
Generally, if there's a big explosion and people are clearly dead, I will take credit for that. It's generally something that I'm always trying to do, sadly. It's not creative. It's a problem.
Jones from the TV magazine show Rock Bottom. We're aware of your problems, and, Mr. Simpson, we want to help.
I saw that report you did on Sasquatch. It was fair and even-handed. I'll do it! Somebody had to take the babysitter home. Then I noticed she was sitting on the gummy Venus, so I grabbed it off her. Oh, just thinking about that sweet, sweet candy. Oh, I just wish I had another one.
When was that joke started where everything would run off the road and then explode, and then it was things that couldn't possibly, like horses would explode?
Yeah, I love those.
That was, milk truck exploding, yeah.
Yeah.
Animals would explode, and things that were not explosive would explode, like a mailbox or something.
Cotton. When other shows went on to do those same gags, so we don't do them anymore.
That's right. And eventually they've stolen all our gags, which our show can't even be funny anymore, because just everyone's doing what we used to do. And so our trick is to not be funny. No. Still a hilariously funny show that we all still enjoy writing, actually. After all this time, it's a testament to how much fun the show is to write. And I'm sure, Julie, to act, because you get to...
I'm sure. I am sure. This was brilliant, this coming up, where they destroyed it.
Now, by the way, when we saw the interview,
like the clock
you see the clock did not move during his interview.
It wasn't a 45-minute interview.
Not at all. And the clock doesn't move, and it's a whole different time, and then it moves all over the place in the playback. So it's a.
I also love how the interviewer is clearly outdoors.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's even the video distortion.
You know, the detail of the video distortion that you get with a freeze frame was just brilliant. Nowadays, if people just know DVDs, they don't know that that's what videotape used to do. Technology is passing some of the jokes by. People are not going to understand.
Yeah, like, for example, the rabbit ears on the...
Yeah, that
was outdated.
Oh, here we go, under the sea.
Here we are, under the sea.
This was an idea that I had, which I thought would be his solution.
And predates The Little Mermaid.
And my lawsuit is still pending, by the way. No, my reaction to The Little Mermaid was I actually liked it quite a bit, but I thought it was a little too sweet. And I thought it would be fun to see Homer eat every one of your favorite characters and therefore kill them.
Because Sebastian.
I love when he pulls the tail back. And now it's all these skeletons around him and everything. I just...
Do you eat seafood?
I used to. Okay. I used to, not anymore.
But after this scene...
Now that is one of the things that helped me become vegan. I'm actually a cheating vegan, as we say. I eat pizza and stuff like that. You can't work in television.
And an occasional cheeseburger or something?
No, only veggie burgers. And I never liked cheeseburgers.
Honestly, don't get
started.
Why
would you want...
You don't know how boring this is going to get when he gets on his... tofu burger.
But even if you ate meat, why would you want a burger, which is the dead animal,
here
and then a product of the dead animal on top
this,
of it?
I'm
just
telling
point
you, this
that
is five
out.
Hours
You're making
a
me
day
very hungry.
I'm done. I'm sorry I brought up the word cheeseburger.
I'm sorry I brought up the word dead animal. No, you brought that up.
Were you trying to point out something, David, that we've now passed?
There was something about
Greg was, actually.
No, I don't know.
Way back there.
He was waving his arms frantically while we're wasting time.
Jeff did a beautiful job doing something, I guess. And,
do you remember this? You may have brought this up in other commentaries, but I saw those helicopters, and I remember when black helicopters was a big deal, and there was internet sites called like alt.black.helicopters and stuff that were... about those things. And do you remember that the internet, I remember first hearing about the internet this season in the writer's room when Bill and Josh would come in and say, there's this thing called the internet that is used by professors to communicate.
No, I had been on the internet for a long time before that, being a giant idiot nerd.
They talked about The Simpsons.
Right.
And
that was one of the first,
get reviews from them.
One of the first big obsessions of the internet was The Simpsons.
Yeah.
By the way, I'll just mention, because we were so annoyed with these talk shows that anybody or any person could do, we thought that it would be a great idea to just have General Ben have his own talk show, because it's so easy to just have a microphone. And obviously something went wrong almost every day on General Ben.
That's one of my favorite things, just the idea that it's... First you have to buy in that it's a bear doing the talk show, and then within seconds it goes so wrong that they're having to tranquilize him. And...
The guest star playing Homer Simpson is Dennis Franz from NYPD Blue and Hill Street Blues before that, his own show before that. He always kind of plays a very tough guy, but he is the nicest man, and he was So he was right on the lot, so it was real easy.
Yeah, NYPD Blue is right down the street from the Simpsons.
What happened there? Did someone else fall out and you just ran outside and grabbed it?
We don't generally like to say their name, but if they're listening, they knew who they are. And screw
He's
you.
He's dead. Lawrence Olivier. Right.
We had actually
Lawrence Olivier. He was on his way and didn't feel well.
We had completely laid out the scene for a different actor.
Yeah,
who's
very, very barrel-chested actor.
Much larger.
Yeah, really? Much larger. So we had to go back. And
choice number two? Is that what we're saying?
Yes. Thanks, Dennis.
Excuse me. I was kind of joking. But
you know, but it turned out that Dennis Franz was better than the other guy could have ever been.
Of course.
So this happens all the time.
This is a great shot, by the way, and I love the way you've done the design of the inside of the house.
Very, very well. This again is all our reaction to getting very annoyed at the way privacy was over, and like I said, the tabloidization of the media happened around this time. It's only gotten much worse, where people just, you know, surrounded your house with cameras, and so we went a little
wasn't
further.
Wasn't there something real about that, too, though?
It's possible
with
to have
infrared?
That. Yes.
Something going on at the time? Wasn't there some infrared?
Well, there is infrared on those helicopters that, you know, that. What was the name of that movie that had the real intrusive helicopter that had Roy Scheider in it and everything?
Oh, Blue Thunder?
Blue Thunder. A lot of this technology is based on what was shown on Blue Thunder, and it's real, and Julie's had many experiences with it. Why don't you tell us a few
of those? Blue Thunder?
Yeah.
Only coming out of my ass. What can I say?
It's quite a sight.
You always go to the actors if you want some class.
Hey, so Julie, when you're doing these shows, when you're at the in the recording studio, in this very room, do you imagine the show in your head, or do you not imagine it, or is it different from what you...
Yeah, it is. Well, that's an interesting question. I don't, actually. I do it as I would do it as a live person. Like, if we were all live actors doing a live-action sitcom, that's how I act. I don't think of the drawings or where it's going to be or seen or anything. It's
You're just existing
right
as the character.
I exist as a character, that, you know, doing that. So as much as you can, standing at a microphone in a music stand.
And I will say, it's always fun to say this when you guys are nice enough to come and do these commentaries with us. It's such a pleasure to direct you. Because Julie is one of our most enthusiastic actors and works really hard on the script and analyzes it and asks questions and makes suggestions. Usually that, this sucks, can we do something better? Those kind of suggestions.
That's not really a question.
Yeah. Well, like I turn it into Julie. I'm so full of denial, I take that. Oh, that's a helpful suggestion.
I try to get a lot of what you do, Julie, physically into the performances, so the way you perform, you know, and try to get some of your physicality in the performance of Bart.
We do try to do that. I think Dan Castellaneta does it the most. He moves quite a bit.
Which one is he again?
But we do try to look at each other and do it like we would be doing it. You know, if those were live people.
I think wearing the big blue wig helps, though, a lot.
What's that?
Wearing the big blue wig.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Matt, sorry, that's not a wig.
Gets me in the voice.
Yeah, Julie dyed her hair to look. Julie loves to be recognized on the street as Marge, so she has a big, high blue.
But what's nice about seeing the show is watching the direction, actually. There's direction within the script that tells you, gives you a little indication, but there's so much more going on, and it's a pleasure to watch it. The angles and like that. You know, I had no idea that would be the way it would be directed, that Lisa's head would pop in at that
point. That's Jeff, you know.
It's wonderful.
A lot, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it's collaborative. You know, as I said, you know, we go in and we have the script that we've written, and I go in and I'll direct the actors, and they bring something new to it. They bring so much more than we ever imagined. I mean, that's the great thing about having this level of actors, these fantastic actors. And it is fun to watch. It's like watching a radio play. I mean, they're doing all the gestures. They're really into it. And then that inspires you, Jeff, right?
Oh, yeah,
Jeff gets a copy of the soundtrack, and that inspires a lot of the acting that he draws.
And for those who don't know, the whole boarding process, the whole show is boarded out roughly, goes back to you guys, and we get all the input of the notes, the writers, of course, the producer, Matt, David, and so the process continues, staging improving at all points during the show.
It's great. It's a control freak's dream because,
I like where the camera's high. Like, who would, so it's sort of them looking down at the, you know, at the guy at the console.
No, the angles are great. The angles, it's a perfect combination, and Matt and I have talked about this too, of a proscenium at certain times for physical comedy, but then every perfect angle to totally give you the best the best feeling of each shot. This is one of my favorite jokes. I came up with that of him kicking him in the face. And I remember George Meyer was very disturbed about somebody getting kicked in the face. He said, does he really have to kick him in the face? And again, you know, these are problems that I'm working out with my therapist. But at the time, I absolutely thought.
Yeah, George was howling and rolling on the floor over the Gentle Ben bear.
You know, it's funny. It's like different people, you know, when you're running a show, that's part of it. You have all kinds of different opinions from very talented people who are just totally wrong. No, it's just when you run the show, it's a subjective thing. You're not saying you're right. You're just saying this is what I want to see. And,
right. Yeah. And then a lot of your taste gets there.
Gets there. And that's
what
you...
directions.
Exactly.
I think the first kick, actually, the first pass was much more brutal.
that might have been my response to George. I said, okay, George is upset. Let's put back a little bit.
So
I like, though, is after he kicks, he's just sort of sadly, his head goes down, and in the back of the bicyclist goes away.
Yeah, the way he backs up,
he's more disappointed about the story meaning of it than hurt at all.
But it's the perfect, his leg, I mean, I couldn't figure out any other interaction except the guy kicking him in the face, because that's where he would be.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, if he could punch him in the stomach, he would, but it was not convenient.
The interesting thing about that, too, is you obviously had him kick him in the face before seeing where his foot was going to be. So you had to imagine how high up a bicycle rider's leg was going to be.
It was a lot of imagining.
Yeah.
Those things.
Well, you've got one of those old-timey bikes.
I do. I come to work on them all the time and constantly kick people in the face. So I'm aware of how easy that is physically to do. That it's fun to freeze that and find out those other things that aren't true. So, you know.
I love the way he refers to Marge as his friend.
One of the corrections is People's Choice Awards is America's Greatest Honor. Styrofoam is not made from kittens, which may or may not be true. The nerds on the internet are not geeks. That's probably my favorite one. I don't know who wrote that, but it's very, very funny. And then at the end of the show, we go to black and have credits like this.
So what year were you? This was 1994, and this is as current as if you guys did this today.
Sadly, it is.
And as you said before, it's worse.
There are only more kinds of gummy candies now. There were too many back then, but it's just gotten worse.
It has. So like the exaggeration isn't as big as it was.
While we're doing this recording, there's something very hot in the media right now, which is taking up everybody's time. It's
the Iraq War.
At least three or four things.
Well, the Michael Jackson trial, and back when we wrote this, it was the OJ trial.
Right, exactly.
But we also had a joke about Michael Jackson sleeping in the oxygen tent.
We did. We were some of the first ones to kick Michael when he was down. I just want to point that out. And he even did the show, so that just shows, even if you do the show, we're not going to be nice to you.